Let's continue our discussion about Bedikas Chametz. Rashi, on the top of Daf Beis Amud Aleph, says, Bodkim, on the second line, Shelo Yavar Olav Bebal Yira Ubal Yimatz. Clearly, Rashi is learning that Bedika is Doraisa, and in order for a person to avoid a violation of Bal Yira Ubal Yimatz, he's obligated in Bedika. And at the end of the process of Bedika, he needs Bir Chametz. He destroys the Chametz. One of the questions that come up with regard to Rashi, we'll see, the Ran has a long discussion to try to defend Rashi against some of the attacks of Tosus, we'll see. But one issue that I want to discuss with you is a violation of Bal Yira Ubal Yimatz. Now, let me try to present two scenarios and we'll compare them. In one case, he knows he has chametz. And if he doesn't destroy his chametz, and he didn't do bittul, then he violates Bal Yira Ubal Yimatz. It's his chametz, it's in his house, he can point to it, he knows exactly where it is. Lechora, that's not the scenario that Rashi is addressing. When Rashi says that when the Mishnah establishes Orli Arbos or Bod Kimas Achomes or a Ner, the very fact that we need a Bdika means that we're searching and finding, we have to locate the Chametz, we don't know that there's Chametz. Now it could be that there is no Chametz, it could be that there's some Chametz that he forgot about, but certainly he's unaware of Chametz. If he knows exactly where the chametz is, that for sure is Bal Yira Ubal Yimatz. But I want to analyze with you the case which I think the Mishnah is addressing. He doesn't know that he has chametz. And if he has chametz, he's not aware of it. And yet, Rashi says he's going to violate Bal Yira Ubal Yimatz. Tosa says something different, that the Bedikas chametz is because he's got chametz around, he might come to eat it, and that's Shem Yavol Yochlo. We'll get to Tosfos and Mitzvah Shem. But in Rashi's frame of reference, we want to prevent him from violating Bal Yira Ubal Yimatz, meaning if he doesn't do a Bedika, he'll violate Bal Yira Ubal Yimatz. Is that really so? If he doesn't know that there's chametz, and he's not looking at a piece of chametz in front of his eyes, is that called a violation of a lav d'oraisa when I'm totally unaware of the fact that I'm violating this lav? And generally speaking, when we talk about violating lavim, we have three categories. One category is mezid. He knows about it. Certainly that doesn't fit into this category. The second category is called shogeg. And a person, in a case of a shogeg, let's say in Ritzicha, Ludugma, he kills someone, he's violating a terrible Avera in the Torah, there's a Maisa Avera, just that he's a Shogeg. He didn't know that he was killing him. But there's a third category in Halacha, and many of you were with me when we learned Tilcha Shabbos. You remember this category? Misasek, exactly. And the Nesivis, who wrote a book on Psachim, opens up his presentation on this Masechta with this question. Isn't Bal Yira Ubal Yimatz in this particular case where he doesn't know that he has chametz, isn't that misasek? Let's explain. The difference between shogeg and misasek is that whereas in shogeg, there's a definite awareness of the maisa that I'm doing. It doesn't happen inadvertently. In misasek, it happens inadvertently. I'm rolling over my sleep, I'm not aware of the fact that I'm breaking kelim. That's called misasek. In other words, if a person is doing action X, and as a result action Y happens, and he's totally unaware of the fact that the second action is going to happen, that's called misasek. He's not aware of the maisa. For example, let's say a person is cleaning out his shofar, and he blows into his shofar. And all of a sudden, a shvarim trua comes out, or a tkiya shvarim trua. The Gemara calls that misasek. Why? Because he's involved in one action, and a second action happens. So that second action which happens is not considered his maisa. It doesn't relate to him. He's not a shogeg in the sense that he implemented that action, but unaware of some of the repercussions. He's just not aware of the action at all. Let's talk for a moment about Misasek and Hilchas Shabbos. Here are two categories, two cases. In case number one, I pick up a sickle, I pick up some sort of a knife, and I cut wheat or fruits or vegetables that are growing in the ground on Shabbos, but I thought it was talush, and it turns out to be mechubar. That's one case of misasek. At least he's aware of the fact that he's cutting a vegetable. In other words, the maisa chituch is done with total awareness. He's not aware of the fact that he's doing a maisa tlisho, or let's call it katsira, because he doesn't think it's growing, it's attached. But at least you have the minimum definition of an action that's being implemented with his das. But let me give you another case. Supposing I'm holding a knife, and I drop the knife. And lo and behold, as luck would have it, the knife falls on a vegetable and cuts the vegetable. That's a more extreme case of misasek. In that case of misasek, he's not even aware of the maisa. Reb Chaim used to say that in tefillah, if he's not aware of the fact that he's standing in front of the Shechina, he's a misasek. It's not even a maisa tefillah. Now here we have a machlokas between the poskim about how to define misasek. And the question that they address is the following. Is misasek considered a maisa avera? Reb Kivega thought that misasek is a maisa avera, just that I'm potter from onshim. So for example, if I cut what I think is tolush and it turns out to be mechubar, that's called a maisa avera. In Shabbos, there's a separate halacha called meleches machshavos, and therefore, in this case, misasek is potter. But that's only in Shabbos. In any other case, if a person is aware of the fact that he's doing a chituch, but he's not aware of the fact that he's cutting something that's attached, that's growing from the ground. He just thinks, like for example, let's say it'd be an Issa Ketzira in Kelayim, or in Shvius. In such a case, he's aware of the fact that he's cutting something. He doesn't realize that he's cutting and detaching something from its Chivus that's attached, and therefore he's called Misasek. So Rav Kivega understands that since he's aware of that Maisa, that's called a maisa avera. Reb Chaim disagrees. Reb Chaim holds that misasek is not just a p'tur of onshin, but rather misasek is mafkia a maisa avera. Now Reb Chaim's case is a case where he drops a knife and he cuts something. He's not at all aware of his maisa chituch. Would Reb Chaim agree in Reb Kivega's case that since he's aware of the fact that he's cutting something, even though he's not aware of the fact that it's growing, he thinks it's tolush, would that be considered a maisa avera? And from what I seem to recall, Rav Soloveitchik used to quote Rav Chaim as saying that any misasek, any category of misasek, is not considered a maisa avera. Why? Because although I'm aware of the fact that I'm cutting something, but that's just a maisa chituch, that wouldn't be defined as a maisa ktsira. Because a maisa ketzira means that I'm detaching something that's growing from the ground. Here I'm not even aware of the fact that I'm growing from the ground. But at least in this case, Reb Chaim agrees that Reb Kivega has a leg to stand on. He has a certain, shall we say, a certain logic that compels Reb Kivega to think that this is called a maisa because he's doing a maisa chituch with total awareness. And therefore Reb Kivega understands that the maisa avera is his, even though he's not aware of the repercussions of his maisa. He doesn't realize that he's doing a katsira, but nevertheless he's fully aware of the fact that he's cutting something. But Reb Chaim says, would Reb Kivega go as far as to say that even if he drops a knife, and lo and behold, the knife falls on a vegetable and cuts the vegetable, detaches it from the ground, that's also called a maisa avera? Clearly, says Reb Chaim, that's not a maisa avera. By the way, Rabbi Kivegan and Rabbi Chaim had another machlokas about onus. In the case of Alanara lo sase dovar, a woman was never raped, and Rabbi Kivegan understands that there was a maisa gili arayis, but she's potter from onshin, lo sase lo dovar, we can't punish her. And Rabbi Chaim said something different. Rabbi Chaim said the lo sase lo dovar means that she's not even doing a maisa vera, that onus is mafkir the maisa vera. But in any event, a similar machlokas we have regarding misasik, whereas Rabbi Kivegan understood that misasik is a maisa vera, and in kol tarkul, except for Shabbos, you'd be chayav a karban, if it's a chiv kares. Reb Chaim understood that misasik is not even a maisa vera. So let's now take the case of bedikas chametz. The man is not at all aware of the fact that he has chametz. Again, if he knows where the chametz is, he violates Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh. That's already amazing. We're talking about a case of bedikas chametz. He's searching b'chor in his stocker to find chametz. He doesn't think he's going to find any chametz, or he doesn't know of any chametz. Why shouldn't that be misasik? Why does Rashi say that we have to compel him to be bodik his chametz, because otherwise he's going to violate Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh? You could say that he's violating Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh as a shogeg, and we want to avoid even a shogeg, but this is not even a shogeg. This is a case of misasik. And the deceivers...
There's no mice at all, so how do you even get misasik? There's no mice. It's a
excellent. Comes along the Nesivitz and he says the following. Then in Kol HaTorah Kula, if you're passive, that's not called a Maisa. But in Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh, in owning Chometz, that's considered like a Maisa. Why? Because since the Torah tells you that the ownership over the Chometz itself generates the violation of Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh, ownership is not something active, it's totally passive. So therefore, according to the Nesivos, what happens is the Torah is, so to speak, upgrading the status of ownership on chametz and considering it like a maisa. You remember that we discussed the Rambam Shita. The Rambam Shita says that if you buy chametz on Pesach or you are machametz and isa on Pesach, you chayv malchus. It's considered bal yiroh bal yimotzeh b'maisa b'asiyah. According to the Nesivos, we're going a step further beyond the Rambam. We're saying that the Torah always considers a violation of Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh as a Maisa, as if you were actively involved in possessing the Chometz. That's the nature of the Avera. Meaning, according to the Nesivos, you could divide all the Averas in the Torah into two categories. There's some Averas that require a Maisa. There's some Averas that are rare and far between that you're chayvim without a Maisa. And what that means, according to the Nesivos' understanding, is that the Torah considers as if you did a Maisa. So here's a case where I have to anticipate that there's chametz in my possession, and as it turns out, there is chametz in my possession. I didn't do a bedika. I'm going to be considered guilty of a maisa vera, not in the technical sense. Obviously, with the naked eye, there is no maisa vera. He's totally passive. But this is the exception to the rule, where the guf ha-avera is b'shev v'altaseh, the Torah says we consider it as if you violated the avera, and therefore you're chayav. Now, on the shogeg, I don't know that there's chametz there, but on the tzad that there is chametz there, if I leave it in my possession, says the Nesivos, I'm considered guilty of the avera of Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh. Hence I need bedika. My question to you is, do we have to go as far as the Nesivos? I think the Nesivos is a very original but somewhat revolutionary idea. And we may be intuitively conservative or hesitant or inhibited about accepting this definition of the Nesivos. And rather we would assume that even though possession of chametz, which the Torah prohibits under two lavim, is passive, the Shevi Altaseh, nevertheless it remains Shevi Altaseh, and therefore there is no Avera here. If I know about it, then the Torah says I'm guilty. I possess this chametz with my idea. But if I'm not aware of it, as we said before, that's not a Maisa Avera. So I was wondering the following. Let's say on Shabbos, you have a door, and if you open the door, the wind will come through. What you're not aware of is that there's a fire that's burning on the other side of the door, and the wind is going to come and blow out the fire. That would be a case of misasik. Why? Because I'm unaware of the fact that I'm involved in meleches havara. So far, so good. Would the Rabbanan make a gzera, meaning a siag, and they would try to do whatever they could to set up an avoidance that you should avoid opening the door? Here's my chakira. One side of my chakira says the Rabbanan don't have to be concerned with this, because since you're a misasek and you're not doing a maisa aver, you're unaware of the maisa havara here, because you don't even know that there's a fire there on the other side of the door, the Rabbanan don't have to get nervous about that. They could let you go. It means, according to this first side, I could be standing here and I see you about to open the door. I know that there's a fire there, you don't know. Am I obligated to prevent you from putting out the light, putting out the candle, and I have to notify you? Otherwise, l'fnei iver lo sitei michshol. Or can I go a step further and say, I don't even have to notify you? Why? Because you're not involved in a maisa havara. If you're totally unaware of the fact that you're doing a maisa havara, I don't have to get involved. And perhaps what Rashi is telling us here is that there will be a violation of Bal Yirah Bayim Matzeh, and we have to do everything in our power to avoid this violation. And even though it's a case of misasik, but the malacha will be done, again in the case of opening the door, and I have to prevent you from doing the malacha. In the case of Bal Yirah Bayim Matzeh, if I can make a gzera, or I can institute something that would prevent you from owning chametz, even though you're unaware of that chametz, and the lack of awareness makes you into a misasek, not the way the Nesivos understood it, then I have to do whatever I have to do to maximize, or shall I say, to minimize the possibility that you will be owning chametz. In other words, what I'm suggesting is that there are two dinim in Lifnei Iver. One din in Lifnei Iver is, if I can prevent you from doing a Maisa Avera, then for sure I have to do whatever I can to remove that barrier and that impediment. But now I have a different case, where at the end of the day the Avera will be done, but not through your Maisa. You'll only be the Gorem to set up the Avera from happening. But technically speaking, you're not involved in a Maisa Avera. The case where you have Chametz somewhere in your possession, you're not aware of it. There's no active violation of Bal Yirah Bayim Matzeh. And not only that, even if we consider Bal Yirah Bayim Matzeh as an avera, from the fact that he's not aware of that, it's like the guy who drops a knife and it cuts something that's mechubar. That's not a ma'is avera. If there's no avera being done here, is there lifnei iver? And it seems to me that that's where Rashi plunges into the big chiddush, into the wild blue yonder, and assumes that if there's a possibility that this avera will be occurring even without a ma'is avera, even if it's misasik, we have to guarantee that that avera will not be violated, that a Jew will not be in ownership of chametz. So the two revolutionary answers to our question, both of them are very, very, shall I say, iffy. And both of them, I honestly feel inhibited about it. I mean, you have the Nesivos' approach that since the Avera, by definition, is a passive Avera, therefore the Torah considers it if you violated that Avera. So even in the absence of a Maisa, it's considered like you did a Maisa Avera. That's unique to the case of Chometz and Bal Yirah Bayim Matzeh. So the second way of saying it is no, that even if it's not a Maisa Avera, but we have to do everything that we can to prevent you from the Avera happening. When I say the Avera happening, it's not that you are actively doing the Avera, you're not implementing the ownership of Chametz, but in reality, we can't deny the facts on the ground. You are in ownership of Chametz, and we have to do whatever we can to avoid that. Now, I wonder if there's a third possibility. What would you say about the following? There's a possibility of misasek, of violating an avera misasek, lurking in the shadows, lurking in the distance. I don't have the option of avoiding that. It's just going to happen. If it happens, it happens. But in another possibility, in another scenario, I can do something which will guarantee that I will not violate that avera b'misasik. Am I obligated to do so? Are we able to go as far as to say, well, since there's no maisa avera misasik, the way Reb Chaim understood it, I don't even have to avail myself of the possibility of setting it up in a way that I guarantee that it won't happen? Or should we say no? Even if it's not a maisa avera, but we should do whatever we possibly can, and if we have the wherewithal, if we have a project that if we implement that project we can guarantee that the avera won't happen, then we're obligated to do so. And Rashi holds that that's the mitzvah of bedikas chometz. Even if the violation of Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi will be b'misasek, Rashi says you have the possibility, you have something in your back pocket which will guarantee that you won't violate Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi b'misasek. Don't come crying to me and say, well, I don't care about the chometz because it's only misasek. You can't do that because you have the wherewithal, you have the possibility, the power of avoiding that violation of Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi. So again, our initial question was, who cares about Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi? There's no Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi. There's no Maisa Vera here. It's Misasik in the full sense. Why do we have to get so hyped up about establishing Bedikas Chometz to avoid Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi? Even in the worst case scenario, he has a Chometz somewhere stashed away that he doesn't know about. If he doesn't do Bedika, he's only a Misasik. And my empathy goes with that approach. But Lamaisa Rashi says that we have to institute Bedikas Chometz because of Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi. Why? I mean, he's not involved in a Maisa Avera. So the Nesima says, no, this is considered like a Maisa Avera because that's the unique nature of an Isur Lav like Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi, which is B'Shevi Al Taseh. The other two approaches are to either say, look, if we can prevent you from this unfortunate situation of your possessing Chometz on Pesach, we have to do that, because otherwise it's a lifnei iver situation. And the other way of saying it is that you yourself are going to violate this avera, albeit b'misaseg, but since you have the possibility, you see, I can't walk around my house and assume that every time I open the door a wind is going to come and blow out a fire. But in the case of Bedikas Chometz, because we can avail ourselves of this possible project, this enterprise called Bedika, then we are now, in a sense, guilty of a violation of Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi, albeit b'misasek, but nevertheless a violation, a possession of Chometz. Yeah.
How does Bitul fit into this?
Well, the truth is, Mitch, I'm deliberately avoiding Bittul here. But what I'll tell you about Bittul is that Rashi himself is avoiding Bittul. Meaning that Rashi holds, and we'll go through the Ran inside Bali Neder, that the Torah says Tashbisu. The Torah says go ahead and destroy your Chometz. Forget about Bittul. Bittul is not Tashbisu because you're not destroying your Chometz. The Ran is going to come up with a radical Chiddush that Tashbisu has two interpretations, both of which are correct, and you have two alternatives. But before the Ran's Chiddush, Rashi is assuming Tashbisu literally. You got to get rid of your Chometz. That's what the Torah says. I am not aware of my Chometz. You are aware of your Chometz. Why? Because you can do a Bedikah. If you can do a Bedikah, it's like you're aware of your Chometz. That was our third approach.
Rashi holds Tashbisu is Bittul.
Correct. That's a Rashi on Avdalah Amid Beis that says that since it doesn't say Tevaru, so Tashbisu is called Hashmasa Malev. But the Ran's thesis is that Rashi accepts two definitions of Tashbisu, and they're both correct. There are two alternative ways of fulfilling Tashbisu. But right now Rashi is focused on Tashbisu Tevaru, which means literally to get rid of the Chometz. And Rashi says the only way you could achieve that mitzvah is through Bedikah. So the Ran, Mitch, is going to address your question, what about Bittul? And he's going to come up with the whole thesis that we don't rely on Bittul and ain't there to him shovels. It's a subjective kind of thing. Fine. Let's take a look at Tosfos. Pirush HaKuntres, Shelo Lavrol V'Bal Yeroh Bayimotzi V'Kasha L'Ri Kevan Ditzarech Bittul. Ah, here's where the Re pulls a fast one on us. We have a sugya later on Daf Vav Amid Beis that requires Bittul. Because Rashi could be operating without bittul, but how is that possible when the halacha requires bittul? Bittul is an absolute obligation and requirement. And not only is bittul a requirement, but midaraisim and bittul ba'amasagi. The Torah relies on bittul that protects you and prevents you from violating Bal Yerovah Yematzeh. And here's where Tosfos rejects Rashi. Now, the Ran, let's take a look quickly at the Ran. The Ran is very much aware of the fact that we require bittul and bittul ba'amasagi. But you know what? The Torah allows for an alternative approach. It doesn't have to be bittul. And that's what he says in the paragraph. Again, I don't know exactly if it's broken down. Here it's broken down, a paragraph that says, Harei Omra Torah. Do you have a separate paragraph?
Yeah.
He says the following. When the Torah says Tashbisu, the Gemara says Tashbisu could be bittul and bittul ba'amasagi. He says the following. What the Torah means is that you have two options. On the one hand, it doesn't say tisrofu or tivaru. It says tashbisu. And therefore, we can derive bittul as an option. But it also says tashbisu means could be tivaru. And therefore, Rashi holds that you have two options in front of you. Now, if you fast forward to the paragraph that starts Elakach, he says the following: Kachu ikrim shel dvarim. This is Rashi Shita. Zesha omer Torah tashbisu, yochol iskayim bi echad mishnei dvarim. There are two ways in which you can fulfill that mitzvah of tashbisu. Aleph, number one: O shiavato belibo kol chomet sheyesh b'rishuso yisienu b'machshavto b'rishuso v'sagi b'och v'deraisa. He's looking at a piece of chometz, and he can be mevatel the chometz. And bittul means that he takes it out of his rishus and out of his machshav. Oh, but the Torah also presented another opportunity, another alternative. In lo bitlo belibo klal, even if he's not interested in bittul, then he has another possibility, and that's what the Torah obligates him to be bodek and look for chametz, b'chol makom shurogel imotzei sham, wherever he, generally speaking, would find chametz, and then if he avarenu min ha'olam. And that's what he's required to do. After he does his bedika, he looks for chametz wherever it might be found, and then he destroys the chametz. Now, exactly how does he have to destroy the chametz? That's going to be a machlokas tanoim. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion, "Ein biur chametz ella sreifa." The Chacham say, "Ash besasa b'chol dova." The biur zeu shenechleku b'meiv arena. Lefichach, kol she'eno mevatel. Rashi is approaching the case where he's not availing himself of the possibility of bittul. Is chayav livdok kidei shelo yavar ol v'bal yiro v'yimotzei. And that bedika, which culminates in a biur, is going to be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Tashbisu. So therefore, Tosfos doesn't have to get so excited and object to Rashi when the Gemara says that we require bittul and bittul is sufficient, because the Torah doesn't necessarily require bittul. Enochinami, the Chachomim are going to say that if even after you fulfill your option, which you availed yourself of bedika, you still require bittul. We're not going to totally rely on your bedikah. Maybe you'll find a gluski of faithful. But as far as the Torah law is concerned, if you're not doing bittul, which the Torah doesn't require, then you're going to violate Bal Yerovah Yematzeh, and you're in you're guilty of non-fulfillment to tashbisu if you don't do bedikah. And that's what Rashi's telling you. Kidei shelo yavar olav b'Bal Yerovah Yematzeh. Now, Tosfos comes up with a whole nother approach to bedika. Tosfos is assuming that our Mishnah is very well aware of the fact that he has to do bittul, and he did bittul. Nevertheless, he needs bedika. Why? Says Tosfos, for a totally different reason. Nirula read the afgav the sagi bittul bi'alma hechmiru chachom livdo chometz levaro shelo yavo liochlo. That he shouldn't come to eat the chametz. So bittul is not going to prevent him from the possible takola of eating the chametz. Of course, Tosfos is going to have to, he's going to have to defend himself against the following onslaught. I mean, we don't find in any other case other than Chometz that the Rabbanu were afraid of Shema Yovel Yochla. Why did they institute this siag in this case? But before Tosfos asks that question, he brings a raya. And this raya is going to be a proof that what underlies Bidika is Shema Yovel Yochlo, and therefore this Rai is going to be a kasha on Rashi. V'chein mashma l'kamon. So the Gemara on Daf Yud has an Iboilahu, a suffix. The Gemara vacillates about the following question. Kikar mishmei Korah. What's the status, as far as Bidika's chometz is concerned, of a loaf of bread that's hanging on the roof, hanging on the rafter? Do we have to be afraid that maybe Zimnin did nafal the Asi lemichlet? It might fall and he'll come to eat it. So let's take a look at the Gemara on Daf Yud. The Gemara says explicitly that we're afraid that he might eat it, and therefore he's chayav in bedika. That is a pretty clear cut proof to Tosfos' sheet. Let's take a look at it. It's before the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Yud Amud Beis, and it starts like the following. Boy Rava, right, it's like two lines before it gets wide. Kikar Bishmei Korah, Tzorech Sulam Lahurido. Now normally when you do your Bdika, you don't have to climb up a ladder, but in this case, you actually, your eye catches the vision of a Chometz up on top, therefore, go ahead and get yourself a ladder. Oh, ain't sorry. That far we don't obligate him. Mi amrina, do we say kuli hai lo achuchu rabbanon? We're not going to force him to compel him to do this tremendous effort here of bringing a sulam and climbing up to the roof, to the rafters. He came into lo nachis mi nafshe. Simply, we don't assume that he's going to take the chometz down and hold it in his hands. Lo asi lemichle. Therefore, we don't have to be afraid that he'll eat the chametz. Oh, Dilma, shall we say no? Zimnin did nafal, although he himself will not climb up and bring down the chametz on Yontu, but it may fall. V'yasi l'michlit, and he'll come to eat it. Says Tosfos, you see, black on white, the Gemara is assuming that the reason why Bedika was instituted by the Rabban is Shem Yovel Yachlo. The question is, how far does Shem Yachlo go? Does it go even as far as Kikar Mishmei Korah, and they'll matriach him because maybe it'll fall down and he'll come to eat it? Or do we say, no, that far they didn't go. The Rabban didn't force you to be matriach you because maybe it'll fall down from the rafter and you might come to eat it. But you see clearly that the agenda here, what underlies the establishment and the chiyuv of bdika, is Shem Yovel Yochlo. So the Achronim want to answer this question of Tosfos, and that's based on a sugya later on. So let me mention that sugya to you. I should have underlined it for myself, so give me just a second to find it. All right, I'll owe this to you. It'll be a chov. I know it's on the page, but I don't find it right now. Let me just see. Maybe I can find it on Daf Ches. Maybe. Just one second. Oh, here it is. Chomet Shenofol of Mapolis. This is on Daf Ches Amid Aleph. And the Gemara says that, what's the status of this chometz that's buried under debris? It all depends, says the Gemara. Is it kelev yochol l'chapes achrov, or ain't a kelev yochol l'chapes achrov? How deeply buried is it? Let's say it's more than gimel tfachim, whatever it is. The dog can't get to it. So the Gemara says the following. That chomet shenofol of mapoles, if it's ena kelev yochol lechapis achrov, it's called mevur, harei hu kimevur. Now this word mevur is the same word as biur, which according to Rashi is is at least one valid interpretation of the word tashbisa. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is that if the chametz is buried and therefore it's inaccessible, there's not even a habamina that you'll eat that chametz, then it's kimavuar. It's as if it was destroyed. Let's try to apply that Gemara to the case of Kikar Mishmei Korah, which is just two blot later on Daf Yud. In the case of Kikar Mishmei Korah, is it kimavur or is it not kimavur? And the answer is it depends whether it's accessible and you might come to eat it. Well, for the Kikar Mishmei Korah to become accessible and we have to worry about you eating it, it would have to what?
Fall down.
So that's what Gemara is asking. Just like in the case of Nuffel of Mapolis, we don't know. Is that chametz that's underneath the debris going to be accessible to you? And it all depends on whether a kelev could retrieve that chametz, dig it up and take it in. Or no, it's not retrievable. And if it's not retrievable, it's buried so deeply below the debris, it's three tefachim down, ain't a kelev yochel, then it's kimavur. So Rashi holds that the whole purpose of bdika is to make it mavur. Why? Because otherwise you're going to violate Bal Yerua Bal Yematze. How do you make it mavur? So the answer is, if it's not something that I can eat, right, it's up on the top of the korah, and we don't assume it's going to fall down, then that's called kimavur. In other words, Rashi could equate the following two scenarios. In the first scenario, on Daf Ches, the chametz is inaccessible. We don't have to worry about you eating it because even a kelev can't get access to it. It's so deeply. In the second case, the kelev can't climb up to the korah, and therefore we don't assume that the kikar shmei korah is going to fall down and you might come to eat it. Therefore, it's out of your orbit. If it's out of your orbit, then the Gemara says that afches, that's called kimavur. So Rashi holds that the purpose and the goal of bedikas chametz is to make the chametz mavur. How do you do that? Well, in the classic case, you look for the chametz, you find it, you burn it. That's exactly mavur in the literal sense. But there's another case of mavur. There's another category of mavur. And that category is something that's mavur because it's not something that you can eat. It's not edible, so to speak. What do I mean it's not edible? I'm not saying it's not physically edible, but it's not accessible to you. And if it's not accessible to you, you're not going to eat it. If you're not going to eat it... So in other words, the Dilma Asi Lemichle here is not the way Tosis understood it, that we're afraid it might fall down and therefore he's going to eat it. Rashi's not looking at it from that perspective. Rashi's saying is it kimavur? Do I have a chiyuv beer to look for this chametz? Well, it all depends upon whether or not you might eat it. You know, if you have chametz that you might eat, that's not called mavur. If you have chametz that you're not going to eat because it's totally out of your orbit, it's inaccessible, then it's kimavur. Now, where do I come off saying such a radical idea? The answer is the Gemara applies the same logic to the case of chametz shenafel of mapolas. That's considered kimavur because ain't a kelev yochel l'chapis achra. No, if it's already mavur, I have no chiyuv bedika. Because Rashi's holding that once it's mavur, I've accomplished my goal, maybe without even getting involved in bedika. Because the whole purpose of bedika is to make it mavur. Here it's already mavur. And how do I know it's mavur? Because I'm not going to eat it. I don't have access to it. Oh, Dilma, should we say no? It might fall from the rafter, and therefore you might come to eat. Oh, if you might come to eat it, then it's not kimavur. Then you chayv in bedika. It's a pell in a sense that Tosi even brought this as a riot. You know, it could be, I'm just thinking out loud, that Tosis might be holding that there are two categories. There's one category called a Chiyuv Biur, Tashbisu, and there's another category called Bal Yerua Bal Yematzeh. And they're two different categories. Even if I come to the conclusion that I'm not Chayiv in Tashbisu, according to Rashi, says Tosis, it should still be a problem of Bal Yerua Bal Yematzeh. Now, the Torah might say, well, you don't have to destroy this chametz. Why? Because it's unlikely that you'll come to eat this chametz. But nevertheless, it still is chametz. It's not like nifsal me'achilas kelev or charcho kodem zmano. It's not an unedible. And you own the chametz. So therefore, as far as Bal Yerua Bal Yematzeh, you violate Bal Yerua Bal Yematzeh. Now, the Torah added a mitzvah of tashbisu, but the mitzvah of tashbisu might have its own criterion. There may be rules and regulations that determine whether you're chayv in tashbisu, but those rules and regulations are not identical to the question of whether you violate Bal Yerua Bal Yematzeh. So tashbisu is a mitzvah that you have to fulfill, and that mitzvah is conditional. When does it apply? When it doesn't apply? You can't just tell me it's chametz. You can't just tell me it's in my house. That's not enough to say that I'm chayiv in tashbis. You have to add another element to the equation. I'm going to come to eat it. If I'm going to come to eat it, it's accessible to me. Then the Torah says tashbis. But what happens if it's not accessible? The Tosis thinks you're going to still violate Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze. So therefore, from Rashi's perspective, what does the Gemara mean by saying, well, is there Shema Yavu L'Yochlo? Is there not Shema Yavu L'Yochlo? Is it Kimavur? Is it not Kimavur? Do we assume it might fall down from the rafters or not? According to Rashi, that whole discussion is irrelevant. Because Rashi is saying we need Bedika because of Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze. If we need Bedika because of Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze, even if I grant you that it's Kimavur, because it's highly unlikely that it'll fall down from the rafters, that tells you that there's no chiyuv of tashbisu. But Rashi is not talking about a chiyuv of tashbisu. Rashi is telling you that the whole institution of bedikah is predicated on Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze. And even if it's kimavur as far as the mitzvah of tashbisu is concerned, you still have a problem with Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze. So why does Gemara make a contingent? Do I have to climb up with a ladder? Do I not have to climb? Gemara says, well, will it fall? Will it not fall? And it's like, you know, Yachol Chapi Sach, Kelev Yachol Chapi, in the case of Nuflo. Forget about all that. I'll grant you that it's Kimavur. I'll grant you that the Kelev is not going to have access. I grant you that there are no winds in my house. I don't have to worry about the possibility of it falling down from the Korah. It's very balanced on top of the Korah. But nevertheless, I still have a chi of bdika according to Rashi because of Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze. I'm owning chametz. The chametz might not be accessible to me right now. It's true, I might not come to eat the chametz, but there's a separate law of Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze. So when you're talking about tashbisu, I have a chi of tashbisu on any chametz which I might have access to and therefore I might eat it. But when you're talking about Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze, it's a whole different set of criteria. If it's chametz and it's edible and I own it, it's inside my house, I have to get rid of it because of Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze. That's Tosfos Kasha on Rashi. Says Tosfos, no, Bedika has nothing to do with Bal Yiroa Bar Yimotze. He already covered his basis in Bitha. So what is Bedika? It's Shema Yavu L'Yochlo. So now Tosfos has to face the music here. Tosfos says, V'atam Shechmiru kan tfei mi b'shar isuri hano shlo tzrichu levarom. What is going on here? I bosu b'chol. Does any Mishnah somewhere in Shas say that I have to be bodek my house because of bosu b'chol? Let's say I'm a bosu b'chol of salesman, right? I work for McDonald's and I very often bring home, you know, something for a client, a non-Jewish client who wants to eat a cheeseburger. So now I have to be bodek my house and get rid of all my bosu b'chola? Well, let's have kelayim, which is also asubana. I have arlo, which is asubana. Where do we find such a thing of make a bedika because he might come to eat it? You know, arlo is very serious because I'll tell you what. In bosu b'chola, maybe, you know, he's not going to eat bosu b'chol. I mean, he can see it with his naked eye. That's bosu b'chol. I'm not sure that always is the case, but in the case of arla, arla is exactly identical to any other fruits. The only difference is that this fruit grew before Tu B'Shvat, and this fruit grew. I mean, I'm talking the third year, going into the fourth year. This fruit grew, or came to Chanoto after Tu B'Shvat. So how do I know the difference? You give me two fruits, they look identical. One is arla and one is mutter. And you're going to leave it floating around your house?
But that's, he said, because it's Isa Olam. The fact that it's the Isa Olam.
Oh, we didn't get to that yet. That's going to be Tosa's answer. I'm just trying to present Tosa's cash. I'm trying to make a case for Tosa's cash. I'm saying, I have a gevaldige cash. I have chametz and matzah. They look very similar. Right, there's a whole sugya later on. I'm learning it at 8:30 about an achbar, and we don't know whether it's holding chametz or matzah, or if you've seen the Yemenite pita. Right? So you're going to tell me I can't leave around this pita, which, you know, that I allowed it to rise after 18 minutes. It's chametz because, you know, if I leave it around, I might mistakenly think it's matzah. So I'm going to ask you the same question about arla. In the case of arla, how can I leave around the arla in my house and then I might come to eat it because it looks identical to something that's not oral, that comes from the fourth year, right? The fourth year is revived, but let's say the fifth year, it's perfectly mutter. So when did the Chachamim, what are the guidelines here? What are the prerequisites? When did the Chachamim say, you know what, we have to make a bedika, you got to get rid of it. I'm afraid you're going to eat it. And when did the Chachamim say, I'm not afraid you're going to eat it? Now, interesting, when Tosfos asks the question, and he gives a few examples, what is the heading of that? What is the koteret, if you know what I mean? All the examples he gives, as Bosu B'chol, Kelayim, and Arlo, what's common to all those three? They're all what? Isur Hanel. So I have a ritva here. The ritva.
He had truma too.
Okay, we'll get to. Oh, you mentioned truma. Okay,
no,
we'll get.
Why doesn't he add it?
Because truma is mutar b'hano. If I'm a zar, I'm allowed to have hano from truma. In fact, if I can't, the mitzvah is to give it to my favorite kohen, right? So I looked into the ritva, and the ritva asks the same kasha as Tosfos, but he says the following. He says that there's a difference between chametz and nevelah. And here's where he's going to introduce the answer of lo bedili v'nei, which we'll get to in just a minute. But for the fact that he wants to differentiate between chametz and nevelah, it means in the mind of the Ritva, it is havamina, he equated the chametz with nevelah. I don't think Tosfos would have ever asked that question. Tosfos would never have formulated the Ritva's question. Why is it that in Chametz the Rabbanim require you to get rid of it, Shamiyam al-Yachlo, but in Nevela they never require you to get rid of Nevela? And the answer that Tosfos would have given is what?
It's not
Yisra HaNoah. Tosfos is only asking about Orla, Kalaya Kerem, and Basa B'chol, which are Asur B'Hanoah. And in my mind, this Ritva is a Pella. What do I do with Yisra HaNoah? Let's say I have a piece of Nevela in my house. What do I do with it? Do I burn it up in smoke? Give it to my dog. Sell it to a guy. I'm not sure if you're allowed to give it as a gift to a guy. That's an Isur of Lo Sechai. But sell it to a guy. And now the Rabbanan are going to say, destroy it? Let it go up in smoke? When the Torah says to you, sell it to a guy if you like. In Isur Yadno, what do I lose by burning it? Nothing. It's awesome. I know I can't get any benefit out of it. So the Rabbanan should get very nervous about Shem Yovel Yachl. But to say Shem Yovel Yachl in the case of the Vela, as the Ritva has it, that's a Pella. Because something that I'm allowed to sell on the open market, now you're going to tell me I have to destroy it. Anyway, the Ritva says, so he's worried about Shem Yovel Yachl, even in the case of Yisuri Achila, which are mutter b'hano. In fact, I'll tell you the truth. It could be that even Tosfos would ask his kasha about Isuri Achila that are mutar b'hano. Why? Because Tosfos is going to give a whole spiel about yayin for a nazir. Now, yayin for a nazir is only also mishtia. It's not also b'hano. The nazir is allowed to give away his wine, or he can invite his neighbor, you know, his friends, to drink from the wine, especially on Purim, right? There's no Isra Noah in Yayin. In fact, there's a Mishnah in Erevin that says, Ma'arvin Yayin Lenazir, that a Nazir could set up an Erev with Yayin, because it's basically Mutab Noah. You can have Hanoah from. All right, some say that an Erev might come under Mitzvah Lehenos Nitnu, but that's very difficult, because an Erev is not a Mitzvah. Erev is only a Machshir or a Matir. It's not a Mitzvah. So that's a strange piece in Tosfos, and Tosfos is going to come up with a whole theory as to why they didn't make a gzera that every nazir, you know a lot of nazirim, right? So we have to tell all the nazirim to get rid of all that wine, you know, destroy it, you know, burn it and let it go up in smoke, right? That's Tosfos' halakha. So Tosfos gives a whole answer that nazir is different. Now the truth is, Rabosai, it seems to me, and I think you'll agree with me, that there's a fundamental difference between chametz and all the other Isuri HaNoah. And what is that? You want to tell me, bedika and biur, go ahead and look for your arla that you know you have in the house, or your klaya kerem, or your basa b'chol that you have in your house. Go search it and destroy it. And why? Well, what about chametz? The Rabbanan said, search, seek your chametz and destroy it. Isn't there a fundamental difference between the two?
After
Pesach. Oh, okay, that's good. Well, that's what Asher was talking about. Easter, all of it, but we're not ready for that. I just think that even before you take a step out with your Easter Olam and after Pesach and so forth, there seems to me a simple difference between chametz and all the rest. Nobody's with me on this? Tashbisu. Did the Torah say Tashbisu with regard to any Easter whatsoever? For the very fact that the Torah itself wants you to destroy chametz, the Torah has, look, chametz is no less repulsive, or no more repulsive, I should say, than oil and clay. I can't possibly call it. And yet, the Torah went ahead and said, Tashbisu. If the Torah already set the pattern and said, destroy the chametz, then it means that the Torah is very concerned about the possibility of leaving chametz around. The Torah has zero tolerance for chametz. I don't even have to rack my brains and figure out why, because that's something that you could do if you're writing the Rambam's Moreh Nevuchim and you want to speculate why did the Torah have zero tolerance for leaving chametz around. But the bottom line is the Torah says I got to destroy my chametz. No, if the Torah says I got to destroy my chametz, it makes sense. You know, we have a rule in Shas called Kol D'Tikra Rabbanan Kein D'Oraisa Tikra. The Rabbanan see the Torah and its rules, and then they extend it. So let's say, for example, the Torah says you have to give Truma from the Chameshes Mini Dagon, from Tirosh V'Yitzar, and the Rabbanan can extend it. They can include Yerokos and Kidneys and who knows what else, right? So they have a framework. The Torah has a limited framework. The Rabbanan are going to go a step further. That's the way it works. And I can give you many, many examples of this. Take, for example, Basar of Bechol, if we pass like Rabbi Yossi Aglil. So the Rabbanan took it a step further. They also called this Gedi. It's not really Gedi, technically, but they extended it. And that's what the Rabbanan do. That's what they do for a living. You know, they get a salary. And Asus Yaglai Torah, the Mishnah says. The Torah says Tashbisu. Okay, you avoided it. Why? You circumvented Tashbisu because you did Bittul. But the Torah basically said, get rid of your chametz. If you want to take that one step further, Rabbanan are going to say, get rid of your chametz. If the Torah is worried about achila, in the case of chametz, then I have to be worried about achila. That's even before you get into philosophical distinctions called, you know, lo bedili minei, and so forth and so forth. I don't know why Tosas feels so compelled to get into this lo bedili minei whole enterprise here. And that's very good philosophy. You know, you want to know why the Torah wants you to get rid of chametz, it's because lo bedili minei. But I don't even have to know that. I never heard of lo bedili minei. Let's say that Bas Mechalov is also lo bedili minei, because the whole year round I'm eating meat and I'm drinking milk, and now they fell together, right? So that's also lo bedili minei. The whole year round I'm eating tvua that comes from the fourth year, and you know, Arla is also lo bedili minei, very attractive. It looks identical. But you know what? I get my guidelines from the Torah. That's not a bad place to get guidelines from, right? And the Torah says Tashbisu. No, the Torah says Tashbisu. The Torah didn't say Tashbisu with regard to any other Isur, whether it's Machalos Asuras B'Isur Achila, and not even with regard to Machalos Asuras that are also Bagda. The Torah never said Tashbisu. But let's see Tosis' answer. Tosis says, Vatam. Shetzrichu chachomim. Where am I? I lost the place here. Vatam shech mirukan tfei mivshari suriyah no shalot tzrichu levaram mishum dechomitz mutu kol hashono v'lo nesarak v'pesach v'lo bedili minei kin amrinu l'kamon on daf yud alef v'lo domi l'vasu b'chol v'yor l'klai akerem, all which are suriyah no she isurim isuram noheg isur olam. So John, you mentioned this Tosis earlier about Isur Olam. What do you mean by Isur Olam? Bedili minei inshi. That's what Tosis means. Now you may have something else in mind, John. That if it's an Isur Olam, then there's another reason why there's no chiv bedikah and bir. But what Tosis says is there's no chiv bedikah and bir on something that's also the Olam because I have a natural repulsive, you know, it's naturally repulsive to me. I'm very used to, you know, the Bali Musa say that the main methodology of Tikkun Amidus is also a hergel. You know, you get used to it. You restrain yourself. So you're very well restrained with regard to these Isurim that are Asur Isur Olam. Again, even though, you know, for everything that's Asur, there's something that's Mutter. In the case of Chametz is Mutter the whole year round. Now all of a sudden it became Asur. These are cases where Tosus claims it's Asur the whole year round, so even though there's something identical that's mutter, for example, I could take, or at least on a Doraisa level, I could take certain cheeses and I can cook meat with cheeses and it's not Rosh HaMachalav, or I can take meat that's not meat according to the Torah, and if I make, I may be tempted to make a you know, to be unaware of this distinction and go from one to the other, but Tosa says if the Iser is an Iser Olam, then we have a principle called Bedili Minei. The Nazir. Now wait a second, Nazir doesn't fit that bill. It's not an Iser Olam. I mean, there is such a thing as a Nazir Olam, but let's say a Stam Nazir Shloshim Yom, so that should be exactly like Chametz. So again, we try to answer that Nazir is Mutabar Noah, but okay, fine. He says, the Nazir Nami Isure Shari Lachrine. The Torah would never, and the Rabbanah would never require you to destroy something that you could give to someone else. It's only also for you. You know, one of the things that Brisk is very famous for, Reb Chaim, is the difference between an Iser Gavra and an Iser Chefza. In the case of Nazir, it's an Iser Gavra. There's only one person in the world, or maybe there's another Nazir out there somewhere, who's also to drink this wine. So Tosa says it's Shari Lachrini, it's only you that's also. You're going to be very careful about not drinking wine because you realize. Yeah. So I don't have to create a whole takana of bedika and beer for the sake of one person who knows very well that he has to restrain himself from this Macholos Asuras. But when we get to something like Chametz, which is also for every single Jew on the face of the earth for those 7 days, then we really have to get nervous. Because now we have to institute all sorts of takaras. No one is allowed to have benefit from this. And that's that really, when we're talking to Gans Klal Yisrael, then we're talking about an Iser Cheftza. The Cheftza itself is Chametz for 7 days. And we got to get rid of that Chametz. If it's an Iser Gavra, you know what? Let him fend for himself. He'll worry about it, he'll be careful about it, and he'll be very, very meticulous. We don't have to worry about the fact that he might forget himself and eat the and drink the wine. I'm bothered by one question here. Yesterday we read the Rambam. The Rambam says that there's another category of bedika as far as chametz is concerned. If he didn't implement his bedika, not erev Pesach, not during Pesach, but liachar Pesach, and the Rambam is saying that's because of chametz she'avol al Pesach. That's very strange. Because Chomet Shavuot of a Pesach, it's hard to say that we're talking about Isuri Anah. And not only that, keep in mind that Tosus' introduction here, he says, Hatam Shechmiru Kan Tfei Bishar Isuri Anah, Shol Hitzrichum Levaram. And we're going to soon see Tosus' second answer, in which he points out that Chometz with Pesach, Achilas Chometz Pesach is an Isur Kares. I mean, that's not really true in the case of Chometz Shavuot of a Pesach. So I'm not sure exactly what Tosus means by an Isur Kares. I mean, Inam Ishani Chometz Shechmir Bo Torah Lavar Bebal Yerah Bal Yimotze. Is a chmiru chachomim livdok ulevaro afilu heichad a bitlo mishum dilma osi lemichle mine. So again, Tosis, even in his Inami, is still harping on the fact that bedika is meant to prevent you from achila. But he's saying that what's unique about chametz is that in the case of chametz, the Torah clamped down on you two lavim of bal yiro bal yimotzei, which we don't find elsewhere. The chachomim took the cue, and they see that the Torah is very careful, very machmir. This is very similar to what we said before. I mean, Tosa says it in terms of Al-Yerah Be'imotzi. We said it in terms of Tashbisu. Now, Tosfos is going to have to face another problem, that there are a number of categories of chametz which do not lend themselves to Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh. And if that be the case, then there should be no chiv bedika vis-a-vis those categories of chametz. Now I want to share with you a Pnei Yoshua. The Pnei Yoshua wants to defend Rashi from the Raya of Tosfos. You remember that Tosfos had a Raya from Kikar Mishmei Korah, where the Gemara says explicitly that he has to do a bedika, get it down, climb up on a ladder, because it might fall, and Osi L'michle, that's the Gemara's language. That seems to undermine Rashi. The Pnei Yeshua goes even further in attacking Rashi. And again, all these kashas he wants to answer with one yisod, one breakthrough. Rashi says in two different places that the reason why we have to get rid of the chametz is because of Shema Yovel Yochla. And Rashi is well aware of the Shema Yovel Yochla. Both of these appear on Daf Vav Amin Aleph. So B'li Neder will look inside. The first case is chametz shel goy b'rishus Yisrael. In other words, the goy has his chametz in my rishus. Do I violate Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh in such a case? No. The answer is no, unless I take a chrayis. But we're talking about a case where you didn't take a chrayis. And Rashi says on the Gemara, Osalo mechitza yutfachim, you have to set up a mechitza so that the chametz of the guy is on the other side of the mechitza. And Rashi says, why? Mishum shemiyachlenu, that he might come to eat it. On the same Amud, the Gemara says, if you find chametz in your house on Yontif, kofa olavas akli. He's got to cover it with a kli. Rashi says, Shema Yovel Yochlo. And there's no Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh, because in that case he already recited Bittul. So in other words, twice in a row, Rashi himself agrees, or shall I say, consents, that there's a problem here of Shema Yovel Yochlo. For example, you took in the first of the wide lines in Rashi on Daf Vav Amud Aleph, he says, Shema Yishkach, Shelo Yishkach V'yochlenu, he might come to eat it. So it's unbelievable that Rashi himself is worried about this. Take a look at Kofal of Kli, that's the Rashi in the skinny lines. Rashi says he found chametz on Pesach. Rashi says that he already did Bittul, so there's no violation of Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh. And he quotes the Gemara of Habodik Tzok Shivatil, and then he says, why does he have to turn over a kli on top of the chametz? El mishum shelo yishkach v'yochlenu. So if Rashi is already aware, and he agrees that there's a Shema Yochlenu over here, then any Gemara that Tosfos will quote, where it says Shema Yochlenu, Rashi knows that there's a Shema Yochlenu. But how do we reconcile that with Rashi? Where Rashi says that the reason for Bedikas Chometz is because of Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh. What happened to Shem Yochlenu? So you'll tell me Rashi's not worried about your Shem Yochlenu. But Rashi is worried about Shem Yochlenu. So the Pnei Yoshua has an interesting breakthrough over here. I haven't yet fully digested it. So what I'm telling you now is just, our first understanding. First level understanding. The Pnei Yoshua uses a svar like a svek-svek. He doesn't call it a svek-svek. I'll read to you his language. He says the following. Rashi was bothered. What are you telling me? Shem Yovel Yochlo? Who says he has chametz? Number two, even if he does have chametz, who says he's going to find the chametz? And number three, even if he finds the chametz, who says he's going to eat the chametz? Therefore, Rashi felt that Shema Yovel Yochlo could not be the underlying motivation of the Chachamim for instituting Bedika. It's too far-fetched. Imtim Salomar Yesh Lo Chametz. V'imtim Salomar El Fine the Chametz. And Imtim Salomar is going to eat the Chametz? It's like Sveikis Sveikis. This reminds me of Sofik Tuba Mishasa Yochim. What's going on over here? Where does Rashi accept Shema Yovel Yochlo? When he's looking at the chametz. The chametz is staring him in his face.
It's there, that's
awesome. The Nachri brought his chametz in, a beautiful piece of pastry, it's sitting there on his table. Or he found a piece of chametz on Pesach. He's looking at a piece of chametz. Now we only have one step removed. He might come to eat the chametz. That's where Rashi says, Shem Yovel Yochlo. And therefore Rashi says also a mechitza, or kofal avasakli. I'll read to you the language of the Pnei Yeshua. I have it here in the original, and I also have it here in a copy if anybody wants to photocopy this. He says the following: Hagemara Mairi Lo Bechir Bedika El Bechavitz Yadua. When Rashi at the beginning of his set of Psachim talks about Bal Yiro Bay Motzi and explaining Vedika, he's talking about Chometz She'eini Yadu'alo. He doesn't know about the Chometz. If he knows about the Chometz, the Rabbanan don't have to institute Vedika. He's got to get rid of his Chometz. But rather, we're talking about a case of Chometz She'eini Yadu'alo. And if it's any Yadu'alo, then Rashi says he has to worry about Bal Yiro Bay Motzi, even though we said it's Mesasek in all the discussions that we had. However, Rashi is Moda that there is a takana to get rid of chametz or do whatever you have to do in order to prevent you from eating the chametz in a case of chametz yodualo. In a case of chametz sheini yodualo, we're not going to say that maybe he'll come to eat it after he finds it. We don't even know if he has chametz in his house. So to be matriach him to look for chametz when maybe he doesn't have any, and then even if in the worst case scenario he does have chametz, he's not aware of it, who says he's going to find it on Pesach? And then even if he finds it on Pesach, is he going to really eat the chametz? That's already too far. That's too far-fetched. That is a gzera on something that's rachok v'rachok ma'od. There's no serious kashash. And therefore, the Pnei Yeshua presents the thesis that according to Rashi, it's only when you have chometz yedua, then we have to worry about shem yovel yochlo. But on chometz sheini yedualo, it can't be that the rabbanon are going to require bdika because of shem yovel yochlo, but rather it has to be because of bal yiro vayimotzei. So that's the Pnei Yeshua, very unique chiddush of the Pnei Yeshua.
So what does Rashi say with the chametz that's hanging up there? What did Rashi say that chametz? The chametz that's
on the we're floor. On Yud, you know,
the base. Yeah. So what would Rashi say with that? Is it concerned?
Rashi's very quiet here in this case.
Yeah.
But I would say that Rashi's talking about Bal Yiro Bay Motzei. In this case, why should we be afraid of Shem Yovel Yochlo if it's up on the Shmei Korah?
Right.
On the other hand, maybe it'll fall down for the Shmei Korah, and the Gemara says he might come to eat it. So we have two interpretations. According to Pnei Yeshua, it could be that this is not so far removed, right? Because you've already passed Shlav Aleph. You already know about the Chometz. Now the question is it going to fall? Is it not going to fall? And then Rashi would agree we have to worry about the possibility of Achil. The other way of learning this sugya, which I think is the achronim, is much more, how should I say, attractive, is that the Shema Yovel Yochlo is taking us back to the sugya of Harehu Kimavuar, which means that if it's not accessible,
well, it's like it's more because it's up there,
right? That it's up there, it's not accessible. It's not chometz that needs beer, and if it doesn't need beer, there's no violation of Bal Yiro Bay Motzei. Tos might distinguish between beer as a mitzvah say and Bal Yiro Bay Motzei as a los say. What I'd like to do now, Rabosai, with your permission, is take a look at two Haggadahs. One Haggadah is called Haggadah Shleima. Yesterday, I couldn't find, for the life of me, the Kiddush of Rav Sajigard. And I gave it over to one of our Chevra here. He couldn't find it either. But today I found it. It's on page 184. And this is the Nusach HaKiddush of Rav Sajigard. Now, we don't have the time to read through this whole Kiddush. I'm going to just read parts of it. Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Asher Kidshonu Mikol Am, V'romanu Mikol Lashon, Bachar Banu Vayigadlenu, Rotzav Banu Vayifarenu. So far, it's pretty similar, at least thematically. Truma Hivdilonu Mikol Agoyim, I think he's referring, I think, either consciously or subconsciously, to the Chazal, which Rashi quotes at the beginning of the Torah, that Klal Yisrael are considered racious, and for racious HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world, just like Truma is called racious. So we, as a nation, are very often compared to Truma. Truma is racious. Then he goes on to say, Eretz Chemda Hinchil Ovasonu. That's interesting. That sounds like Bracha Mein Shalosh that we recite after eating mezonos or fruits. Kidei Sheshmo Ba'olam Kulo. He sanctified his name in the whole world. Biglal Avol Shasu is Ritzono. Gvuros Rabos Osalamanehu. Ein Cheker Linflosov. Adas Kedoshim Osanukara. Kerem Chemda Nota Shashuim. And I'm skipping here because there are another 10 lines here. And then it goes, V'yikadshenu kedushas olam. God sanctified us an eternal kedusha. V'yikarvenu lefnei ar Sinai. V'yarishenu, and he gave to us divrei chayim. He's referring to the Torah. And then it goes on and on. He says, Hodia ki bo, on this day, Hotzi Hashem es avodav mi Mitzrayim, Mikura barzel osan nimlat, osanu nimlat, and Lodia kibo kiblus malchuso beratzon li avdo belev of shalom. You know, today is the day of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Therefore, this kiddush has to mention Yitzias Mitzrayim. And basically, what I'm reading here in the kiddush of Rav Sajigon is what I call Hallel. In other words, if I was a liturgical poet and I could write my own poetry for the mitzvah of Hallel, this would be a perfect liturgical Hallel. I mean, we go through so many different things, and we mention all the aspects here of Geula.
This is the first. This is the Kiddush, first Kiddush
over the first cup. He doesn't have our Kiddush, which takes about 3 minutes. He's got a Kiddush here. It's got to take you 10 minutes. And after three pages, he finally ends with a bracha, with a chasima. So, Bosai, I just want to say one thing about this kiddush. I'm not telling you to change your minhag, but what is the impetus? What cube is the Rav Sajigon trying to accomplish? Kiddush on Leil Pesach has two different dimensions to it. It comes under two different categories. It's not like the Kiddush of any Shabbos or any Yom Tov. Kiddush on Leil HaPesach is integrated into the very fabric of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Haraya, the Trumas Hadeshin, says the following, that Kiddush on Leil Pesach could only be fulfilled after Tzeis HaKochavim. Meaning that with regard to Shabbos and Yom Tov in general, we have a halacha called Tosefes Yontif, Tosefes Shabbos, and from, let's say, as early as Plaga Mincha, you could accept upon yourself Kedushas Hayom, and you could recite Kiddush, not so on Leil HaPesach. Why? Because the Kiddush wears another hat, and it fits into what category? Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is only Balayla. B'shoshesh matzah Pesach matzah morim nochim lefanecha, and korban Pesach can only be eaten after it's vare laila. There's no din of kabbalas tosefes yontif v'ochlus abasar b'laila zeh. So just like Pesach needs laila, and matzah needs laila, and hagod and sipur needs laila, so too kiddush, insofar as it's integrated into the very fabric of sipur yitzias Mitzrayim, it requires laila. Now, where is Kiddush Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim? So first of all, the Kiddush opens up with Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim. But how do I demonstrate that Kiddush is part of Yitzias Mitzrayim? Of course, the Trumas Hadeshen, it's only Balayla, as opposed to Kiddush on any of the other. But it's more than that, Rabbosai. Because Kiddush on Leil HaPesach is the first of what? Of the four Kosos. The Arba Kosos. The Arba Kosos and their brachos, each one of the Arba Kosos gets its respective bracha, are integrated into the very fabric of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now again, I have to ask you a kasha on that, because I don't know what to do with Birkas HaMazon. Birkas HaMazon is a far stretch, but there too we mention Yitzias Mitzrayim in the second bracha of Nodalecha. But what I'm suggesting is that you can have a nusach of Kiddush or Birkas HaMazon, which is identical to the nusach the whole year round, but the same nusach will now take on a new kiyum, an additional kiyum. It's not just Birkas HaMazon. It's Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's not just Kiddush. It's Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. And that means that each one of the four kosos will tell you what is critical in Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim. And the first of the four kosos is Kiddush. Comes along with Rav Sadia Gaon. Again, I don't know what he's going to answer about Pirkus Avos, and I can't tell you. But he says that Kiddush, insofar it is, as it plays the role, not just Kiddush, but it's also the kickoff of Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim, whatever we can integrate into the Kiddush, that embellishes the Kiddush. And maybe it's even instructive. Maybe this is even pedagogic. What Rav Sadia Gaon wants to do is, he wants to go out of his way to instruct the people that this is not your regular Kiddush. Change the Nusach. Incorporate into your Kiddush any gratitude that expresses the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us, the people of Israel, v'kirvanu, and he took us close to us. So it's not just that we went from Avdus to Chayrus, it's not just the redemption from slavery, but there's an additional element here, and that is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us close, and all these expressions of thanks to Hashem are all indicating that God took us close. What I'd like to do with you now is look at a different Sefer, and that is the Seder HaOruch. My only problem is I don't find it. Where is it? Let's see if we... Oh, here it is. It's Nafal of Mapolis. Okay. Now, yesterday, I mentioned to you Perek Samach Dalet, Siyata Dishmai, which is called Haggadah. And he goes through, you know, the various parts of the Haggadah, he classifies them, he shows you which are critical, which were added b'minog as we embellished the Haggadah and it became what it is today. But at the end of this very long presentation, he says the following: why is Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim called Haggadah? And of course the obvious answer is because it says V'igadah to Lebincha. But he gives a second answer. And he says that Haggadah miloshen hodah. This is interesting. Now, how does he know that the word Haggadah, which you would translate as telling or conversing or transmitting, how does it become hodah, gratitude? And he quotes here a Targum in Sefer Dvarim. On the Pasuk in Parshas Bikurim, it says, Higadati ayom l'Hashem Elokecha. And we interpret that as Shvachis Yoma Danan. All of Mikra Bikurim is about expressing gratitude to Hashem that He took us out of Mitzrayim, He brought us to the land, we were able to plow and plant and produce all this fruit. That's what we recite as Higadati Ayom L'Hashem Elokecha. We're thanking Hashem, expressing our gratitude for the fact that we have these Bikurim, we have these fruits. But in any event, you see that the word higadati means higadati shvachis denan, and that I express my gratitude. And I want to say that if we accept this approach, that the reason why Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim is called Haggadah is because Haggadah means hodah, then now we begin to see that Hallel becomes an integral part, an essential part in Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim. It's not just a separate independent mitzvah of Hallel. And we also understand why Rav Sadia Gaon wants to upgrade the level of Hodah in Kiddush to incorporate all sorts of different Hodahs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the night of Magid, of Haggadah. Haggadah means Hodah, means Shevach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabosa, if that be the case, then maybe we have an answer to the question as to how did Chazal know that the appropriate middle and critical section of Haggadah should be Arami Ovid Ovi. Arami Ovid Ovi is the parasha of Mikra Bikurim. Why are we mishing Arayne? Why are we are integrating two different mitzvahs? We take the mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim and now we upgrade it to the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim? And the answer is because that's what Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim is all about, V'igadeta. And Vigadita means Shvachis Denan. Shvachis means gratitude. Do we have a parsha in the Torah that expresses gratitude? And the answer is Mikra Bikurim. Because in Mikra Bikurim we go through four psukim, each of which adds another dimension to the gratitude that we have to express. What bothers my mind here is at the end of this presentation of Perek Samach Dalet, he asks the following question: why did the Chachamim establish a Haggadah on Leil Pesach? Yes, there's a mitzvah of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, but why the Haggadah? And he basically points to the ignorance of, or the possible ignorance of members of Klal Yisrael. Ein kol ha'am yodim l'saper. You tell me that you have to tell the story of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, and not every Jew is capable of doing so. And therefore, he might not fulfill his obligation of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Rabbanim felt they had to objectify, and they had to create a Haggadah to facilitate, to guarantee that every single last Jew will be able to thank Hashem and tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. What bothers me about this paragraph, which he quotes in the name of a sefer called Sefer Hayom, I'm not familiar with the sefer. Maybe elsewhere in the book he'll tell you who authored the sefer. But I would have said something totally different. Why do you have to introduce Amaratzis and tell me that the people don't know how to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Every Jew can tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. My 5-year-old grandchild can tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Do you have to be a genius? The simple answer to this question is that there are certain critical elements which this chapter is meant to outline that are absolutely indispensable to Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. For example, if you don't have a Haggadah, then how will you know Maskil Bignus, which according to Rav means we go back to Terach, or according to Shmuel, we talk about Avodah Mayinu, Messiah B'Gnai. I'm sorry, Messiah B'Shvach. So Maskil Bignus and Messiah B'Shvach is essential to Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. How would I know that you have to darshan Arami Ovidovi if I don't have a Haggadah? How do I know that I have to recite Rabban Gamliel and point to the matzah and says matzah zu al mash alma? How do I know that bechol dor v'dor and a person has to recite shira and halil? I mean, how would I know such a thing? This is not a question about maratzis. You'd have to be a genius, the biggest lamdan in the world, to know how to fulfill the mitzvah of CPG Sutrayan. The Chachamim pinpointed 5 different elements that are absolutely critical in the mitzvah of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. If you're missing any of them, you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah. So I'm going to walk in, you know, to my, let's say my mother invites me for the Leil HaSeder. I come with my wife and my kids, and I don't have a Haggadah. So again, if you know the Haggadah by heart, you're good to go. But if you're not such a genius, Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, oh yeah, you know what, we were slaves in Egypt and we went free. Fartik HaMaisa. That's a different mitzvah, by the way. What mitzvah would I fulfill just by saying we were slaves and we went free? Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. But now we're not talking about Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're talking about Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. So I don't know why he has to work overtime to justify the Haggadah as an institution.
I think we could put it in a much like tefillah, made an institution of tefillah. We don't need, but we can't express everything in our tefillahs.
Correct.
We could try all day long.
You need shevach, and you need bakasha, and you need odah.
You need the guideline for tefillah. And you need a guideline for Haggadah. It's not that it's...
Right, so I don't know why he has to come up with this... fetch the answer. I'll read to you the answer. He quotes a sefer. And he, by the way, he doesn't comment on this. You know, it's not like he brings... sometimes he brings 2 opinions or what. And he says the following. He says, Alulim l'Israshel. He says they might be Misrashel. Befratcha ochlim v'shosim v'tachtefenushena. You know, eat a full meal, you might fall asleep. In other words, in my opinion, what he's looking for is like a kvetch the teretz that we need our Haggadah. Why do we need our Haggadah? Because we might fall asleep, because we might be dumb. It's not because we're dumb. It's because the mitzvah of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim is a very complex mitzvah. There are many different elements to it. We have to integrate the matzah and the maror into the fabric of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's Rabban Gamliel. We need halel. There's so many requirements and so many elements in the Haggadah. I mean, if you ask me, we're going to spend days and days on trying to figure out what are the critical elements of the Haggadah. So it's not shocking to me, but it was shocking to me when I first realized this, that if you don't recite Dayenu, you can still fulfill your mitzvah. Wait a minute, Dayenu? That's the, my father, may he rest in peace, was the chaplain of the Coney Island Hospital. So every year he would take me and my sister, the younger kids, to the hospital. We would do a mock Seder. And we tried to get the patients involved. It was before Pesach. It wasn't a real Seder. And you know what? Some of these patients were very old. Some of them were in wheelchairs. When we got to Dayenu, like, the whole place, like, woke up. Then I remember, I'll never forget, there was a guard, you know, the Coney Island Hospital, like any hospital has guards, you know, they wear the badges and so forth and so on. So it turns out that the guard was Jewish. And we invited him to join the Seder. He couldn't leave his post, but towards the end of the Seder, he came in and he sang Echad Miodea in Yiddish. I'm telling you, you and I would not have even known he was Jewish, let alone Frum or anything like that. And he used to come in and say, and he had old niggin for it. I forget the old niggin, I'll remind myself. But Dayenu, I mean, Echad Miodea. And none of this is critical. So I'm saying, you know, when we read the Haggadah, you know, there's certain popularity of certain parts of the Haggadah, but I'm not sure that they're critical. Even I'm not even sure Vihishamda Lavasid is critical. I mean, that's a whole discussion amongst the Mefarshim. So when you ask me why they instituted Haggadah, I mean, to me, Haggadah is a lundership piece of work that, you know, you have to be a genius to figure out what, you know, to solve the Haggadah. There's so many different elements. But what I really wanted to learn with you today is Perek Ayin Dalet. We don't have time for it, so I'll just give you a little bit of an introduction. Perek Ayin Dalet is about 10 pages long. If somebody would photocopy it for tomorrow's shiur or next week's shiur, I would be very happy. And it's called Ofen Amiras Haggadah. And he goes into tremendous detail about how to fulfill the mitzvah of Haggadah and the various elements that go into making into being mekayim this mitzvah of Haggadah. One of the elements that he has, for example, which I'd love to discuss with you on another occasion, is what he calls Amiras Haggadah Bi'ema Ubi'ira. Why? What's that all about? Ema and Yira. He has another issue here about whether we should recite the Haggadah Be'heseva, or do we have a seva only when we drink the wine, when we eat the matzah. He has another discussion about whether or not Haggadah requires that everyone recite the Haggadah for himself. Does it require Kol Ram? Can you just look at it? Then he has another question. Can you recite the Haggadah Bal Peh? We have a principle called Dvarim Shebichsav, Iyat HaRashayim Lomer Bal Peh. And the Haggadah is made up of, let's say, the Arami Ovidavi section of Psukim in the Torah. When we read a parasha in the Torah, we're not allowed to read it Bal Peh. We have to read a Mitoch HaKsav. Then he has a question about the relationship between Haggadah and the Yayin. You know, we know that Bavur Zem means B'shoshesh Matzu Mara Mufunach. What about the Yayin? Is there a din of Haggadah Al Kos Yayin that there should be a cup of wine for the entire balance of Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim of Haggadah? Then he wants to know what happens if it spills in the middle of the Haggadah. Then he has a whole discussion about Halach Ma'anya. Why is that the introduction to Haggadah? Then he has an analysis about Manishtana. To what extent did Manishtana change over the course of centuries? When the Beis HaMikdash stood, there was one Manishtana, another Nusach after the Beis HaMikdash fell. Fascinating chapter. 10 pages. It's Perek Ayin Dalet. So, Rabosa, you'll let me know if you're interested in this. I mean, to me, this is a wonderful opportunity for me to study, you know, not only the Gemaras that we're doing in Bapadika, and we'll get to Bittul of Yitzchem tomorrow, but also to begin to get a grasp on the Haggadah and the Magid and the Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim. Yeah, sure, please. This is only volume one. I have to ask for my, maybe my son to get me. Well, how many volumes are there? Three?